Welcome back to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories, trends, and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Thanks for joining us for episode 406. Today we are looking back at the top stories from yesterday, May 24th, 2026. We have a really fantastic lineup for you today. We are going to be talking about a new DeepSeek native coding agent that is doing some clever things with caching, a fascinating report on how memory is completely dominating AI chip costs, and a controversial move by AMD that has the FPGA community up in arms.
Plus, we'll be looking at a piece of computer history with Microsoft open sourcing the earliest known DAW source code. And we are wrapping up with something that is just pure hacker magic, a 16-byte x86 assembly program that generates both video and audio.
Let's kick things off with the AI coding agent story. There was a post that got nearly 500 points yesterday about a project called ReasonX. It is a DeepSeek native AI coding agent designed for your terminal. But the really interesting part of this discussion was not just the tool itself, but how it handles caching to keep costs down.
Right. So anyone who has been using these agentic coding tools knows that the context windows can get massive. And if you are not careful, the API costs will absolutely eat you alive. ReasonX is opinionated about how it talks to the DeepSeek API, specifically to maximize cache hits. In the documentation, the creator points out that automatic prefix caching only activates when the exact byte prefix of the previous request matches.
And that is the kicker. A lot of these agent loops are sloppy with how they form out prompts. They might reorder things, rewrite sections, or inject fresh timestamps on every single turn. If you put a new timestamp at the top of your prompt, you have just invalidated the entire cache for that request. The ReasonX developer noted that in practice, most agents get a cache hit rate of less than 20% because of this.
The comments on Hacker News really dug into the mechanics of this. A user named Creeman pointed out that LLM key value caching from the harness side should actually be quite easy. You just need to keep the prompt prefix stable and only append new information at the end of the conversation. They gave a great example, saying you should never put the Git branch name into the system prompt at the very beginning, because the second you switch branches, you invalidate the entire prompt cache.
It is like the old joke that another commenter brought up. There are only two hard problems in computer science: cache invalidation, naming things, and off by one errors. But there was also some debate in the thread about how other tools handle this. Someone mentioned OpenCode and how the developers there have talked about pruning tool calls from the context history to save money.
Yes, that part was fascinating. Pruning old tool calls actually breaks the cache for that specific turn, but then you get cache hits on subsequent turns with a much smaller total token count. It is a balancing act between maintaining a long cached prefix versus just sending fewer tokens overall. A user named Estebarb mentioned they were using OpenCode with DeepSeek and got 120 million input tokens hitting the cache versus just 2.5 million missing. So when it works, it really works.
It just goes to show that as these models get cheaper and more capable, the real engineering challenge is moving to the scaffolding. How you manage context, how you structure your prompts, and how you squeeze every ounce of efficiency out of the API.
Speaking of squeezing out efficiency and costs, let us pivot to our hardware story. Epoch AI released a data insight piece showing that memory has grown to nearly two-thirds of AI chip component costs. Specifically, high bandwidth memory, or HBM, accounted for 63% of total AI chip component spending in the fourth quarter of 2025.
That is a massive jump. Just back in the first quarter of 2024, it was at 52%. To put some real numbers on this, HBM spend across NVIDIA, AMD, Google, and Amazon grew from roughly $12 billion in 2024 to $32 billion in 2025. Meanwhile, the actual logic dies, the brains of the chip, stayed flat at around 13% of the cost.
This really reframes how we think about AI hardware. We call them GPUs, or AI accelerators, but from a cost perspective, they're basically just giant, incredibly expensive memory modules that happen to have a logic chip attached to them.
Exactly. And the Hacker News comments took this in a really interesting geopolitical and market direction. A user named GPM pointed out that this means AI inference and training have a path to a massive hardware cost reduction without any new technical innovation. We literally just need the DRAM supply to catch up with demand.
But will it? That was the big debate. The traditional memory makers like Micron, SK Hynix, and Samsung have a history of keeping the market slightly undersupplied to keep margins high. They do not want a repeat of the massive oversupply crashes we've seen in the past.
That is where China enters the chat.
Several commenters brought up Chinese memory manufacturers like Changxin Memory Technologies, or CXMT. While the big three are focusing all their high-end capacity on HBM for data centers, Chinese manufacturers are starting to flood the consumer market. Someone noted that Corsair recently released DDR5 memory sticks using Chinese chips.
It is a classic market dynamic. The established players move up market to chase the massive AI margins, leaving a vacuum at the lower end that new players will happily fill. And as those new players get better yields and more revenue, they will eventually start crawling up the stack to compete in the high-end memory space too. It is going to be a very interesting few years for semiconductor supply chains.
Let us shift gears to a story that generated a lot of frustration yesterday. A thread on the AMD customer community forums blew up on Hacker News. The title is, Why is Vivado 2026.1 dropping Linux support for free tier?
For some context, Vivado is the software suite used to program Xilinx FPGAs, which AMD now owns. FPGAs are field programmable gate arrays, basically hardware you can program. Hobbyists, students, and researchers rely heavily on the free tier of Vivado to learn and build projects, and a huge portion of that community uses Linux.
So AMD dropping Linux support for the free tier is a massive blow to the ecosystem. But what really set Hacker News off was not just the decision, but how AMD handled the communication. The official replies from the community moderators completely ignored the actual question and instead focused on tone policing the users who were complaining.
Right. The moderator posted a response calling out unacceptable abusive behavior and said people were using hurtful words like disgraceful. A user named Mort96 summed it up perfectly, saying the most important thing to the moderator was obviously to ask people not to use hurtful words towards poor little AMD, while answering the actual question was not a high priority.
It sparked a huge debate on Hacker News about corporate communication and customer service. A user named B. Barood said it struck them as unprofessional. They pointed out that when a company screws over entire segments of their customers, people get angry, and they do not get less angry when their frustration is belittled by a corporate representative who essentially says, "Your dissatisfaction means less to us than the words you choose to describe it."
There were a few people playing devil's advocate, saying that frontline support workers should not have to take abuse. But as another commenter pointed out, nobody was attacking the moderators personally. They were calling the corporate policy disgraceful. Corporations are legal structures, not people with feelings.
The real tragedy here is the long-term impact on the ecosystem. As one user noted, to grow the ecosystem, AMD needs more people working on their hardware. Restricting Linux to paid tiers only alienates the exact students and developers who would eventually champion AMD technology when they go out and get enterprise jobs. It feels like a very short-sighted move to squeeze a few extra enterprise licenses out of the market.
It really does. Well, let us take a break from the corporate drama and look at some computing history. Microsoft has open sourced the earliest DOS source code discovered to date. We are talking about 86DOS, which predates the MS-DOS branding entirely.
This is such a cool story. Tim Powderson originally created 86DOS, which was known as QDOS, or Quick and Dirty Operating System, for Seattle Computer Products. Microsoft licensed it, hired Powderson, bought the rights, and then licensed it to IBM as PCDOS. That deal basically created the Microsoft empire.
And the way they recovered this code is wild. It was so old, it had not been stored digitally. A dedicated team of historians called the DOS Disassembly Group had to painstakingly transcribe and scan the code from physical paper printouts provided by Powderson. Modern OCR software actually struggled with the quality of the decades-old printouts.
The Hacker News thread was full of nostalgia. Someone pointed out that the Git repository has a commit that says 49 years ago, which is just hilarious to see on GitHub. But my favorite comment was from JMWard01, who pointed out that while DOS got Microsoft the IBM contract, the real product they cared about back then was their BASIC interpreter.
Yes, for decades, Microsoft was fundamentally a developer tools company that just happened to have a side business writing operating systems. The history of Microsoft BASIC is fascinating. Bill Gates and Paul Allen wrote the Altair BASIC interpreter using an emulator on a PDP-10 minicomputer. It became the absolute de facto standard for home computers in the 70s and 80s.
Someone even brought up the old Commodore 64 story. Jack Tramiel at Commodore licensed BASIC for Microsoft for a flat fee of $25,000 instead of paying a $3 per unit royalty. He famously told Bill Gates, "I am already married," meaning he was not going to pay ongoing royalties.
Given how many millions of C64s were sold, Tramiel got the bargain of the century.
It is amazing to look back at how small the software industry was. A user named NanaNana9 said, "I cannot describe to you how jealous I am of the fact that back then, writing a few thousand lines of assembly was what it took to launch a successful software company."
Which brings us perfectly to our final story, which is all about writing a few lines of assembly. The post is titled, "Wake Up 16-Bit." It is a write-up by a demo scene coder named Helmut about a program he released at the Outline demo party in May 2026.
This blew my mind. It is a DOS program written in exactly 16 bytes of x86 assembly, not 16 kilobytes, 16 bytes. And it generates an infinite Sierpinski fractal on the screen while simultaneously playing a mathematically generated audio track through the PC speaker.
It is literal black magic. The author explains how it works, and it is just a masterclass in exploiting hardware architecture. The program uses the VGA text buffer memory address as its calculation space. Because the BIOS clears the screen with a specific space character and color attribute, the memory is not actually empty. It is primed with a uniform pattern.
Right. And then the code steps through memory, doing an XOR operation. Because carry-free addition of bits is XOR, it naturally generates a Sierpinski triangle based on elementary cellular automata rules. But the craziest part is the sound. The code takes that calculated byte, writes it to the screen, and then shoves that exact same byte straight into port 61H, which is the PC speaker interface.
So the visual geometry you are seeing on screen is directly creating the square waves that you are hearing. The ones and zeros push and pull the speaker cone. And because it moves backward through memory in 56-byte steps, it creates this diagonal shearing visual effect while dropping the audio frequency by an octave to make it sound better.
The comments were just in absolute awe. A user named SelfSimilar said, "16 bytes equals immediate black magic, and it is a witch. I get it in the abstract, generative art and fractals have infinite depth, but this is madness."
Someone did the math and pointed out that there are only 2 to the power of 128 possible 16-byte programs. When you filter out the ones that are not valid instructions, and then filter for ones that access both video and audio ports, and then filter for ones that actually produce something aesthetically pleasing, you are looking for a needle in a cosmic haystack.
The author, Helmut, actually showed up in the comments and mentioned that he also released a 32-byte fractal called Broccolori at the same event. It is just so refreshing to see this kind of extreme constraint-based programming in an era where, as one commenter joked, if this was made in Electron, it would be a 300-megabyte download and use a gigabyte of RAM.
It really is art. It strips away all the layers of modern abstraction and touches the bare metal of the machine. It is a great reminder of why so many of us fell in love with computing in the first place.
Absolutely. And that is all we have time for today on HN Pod. From the sprawling context windows of AI agents to 16 bytes of pure assembly magic, it has been a great cross-section of what makes Hacker News so special.
Thanks for tuning in to episode 406. If you want to read any of the articles or jump into the comment threads we discussed today, you can find all the links in the show notes. We will be back tomorrow with more of the top stories. Until then, happy hacking!